Hello, this is Sam Minter here. Just a quick warning. While Ivana and I were planning the show, Alex started talking to Ivana, and then that conversation led into what would become our first topic. And so because of that, and because, hey, I just thought it was kind of cute, I decided to just start the show with our pre-show conversation, including Ivana's conversation with Alex. Now, many of you may not appreciate that and may not think it's entertaining or funny or cute or whatever and just want to get to the meat of the show. For those of you, this is heads up. Fast forward just about 6 minutes and 30 seconds and you'll skip over all that stuff. For everybody else, hey, there's 6 minutes and 30 seconds of stuff at the beginning. Enjoy if you enjoy that stuff. If you don't enjoy that kind of thing, hit the fast forward button now. Go forward 6 minutes, 30 seconds, and you'll be cool. Okay, here's the show.
Hello.
Hello, Mr. Bo.
Well, whatever the hell they did in that last update on this thing. I mean, now I hit the damn thing and it just, boom. I mean, it's answering. It's no spinning wheel, nothing. I mean,
oh, on Skype?
Oh, yeah.
Cool. Cool.
Yeah, I mean,
when I opened Skype just now, I just had the little notice that we've updated Skype to the latest version. So,
yeah,
I'm very excited about that. I guess.
Yeah, it's working good. So, all right. So I got I wrote down a few topics. Okay, right. So
okay. Give me your list.
All right. Let's see. So, we had a little bit of a Twitter tiff over one of our segments last week. And as a matter of fact, I put just recently to Twittered an article a little bit related to a little bit on that. So,
okay.
I can talk a little bit about that. We had some protests in Ukraine this week, which were kind of interesting, the reasons for why that happened. And we had then Nelson Mandela die.
So, yep.
So that's my.
That's your list.
Yep.
Okay. So let's see. We had two of those in common. The automation thing again.
Yep.
And Mandela.
Yep.
So those are the two we had in common. So we'll definitely do that. If I can. Okay, I'm forgetting how to type here. Okay,
I'm looking at that. It's been quite cold up there just recently.
And so here's my list. And some of these are really short ones.
Okay,
I was gonna mention.
Daddy, can we stop talking to Yvonne? Because I need you.
You need to talk to Yvonne?
Hey,
I'm building a new level and. Even I got did only French fries and chicken and then I had a toy. It was a special and it had only yellow corner pieces and it was beautiful. And you does not make it too wibbly wobble. You just make it just a circle out wiggly wobbles. And you need to make it around a circle and there's no train cars. Zero train cars means no train cars and only one train. It is yes train and it's blue freight train now cars.
Okay.
You get all that?
Yeah. Sure. Okay. All right. I'll get on it as soon as I can.
And I'm building a new level right now.
Yeah? Okay.
And it's only train simulator, you build a new level. Okay. And not on Trains Driver or another train games.
Okay. Okay.
And we ordered one of Flames stuff and makes them on fire. And the one
set the train on fire?
Locked.
Yeah, okay. That's right.
And it even doesn't burn your house.
It's gonna burn the house? This is no good. That's no good. No, no burning of the house. No.
It won't burn up a house.
Are you sure?
Because okay. It's a game on stuff.
Okay, well, just making sure. Don't want to. No burning of the house. That's bad.
It's very only bad. Burning stuff are on a burning game.
Okay.
And you burn a house on a burning game.
On a burning game. Okay. All right.
Yeah, and it has no people.
Okay.
It has different stuff to blow up.
Okay. Okay. Well, can you send me a picture of the train?
The new train you got today?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Hold on. I'll send Yvonne a picture. This was a train that came with a meal at Wendy's.
Okay. Okay. Well, seems to be very exciting.
So and then there are multiple things that he told you about. So the one was the train he got at Wendy's.
Yeah.
And then he was telling you about the new level he was building on Train Simulator.
Right. I got that. But it's on Train Simulator. That's where he was doing
Train
it. Okay.
Train Simulator, which is a game that's on the iPad. Okay. There's also a Mac version.
I gotcha.
And
I
you
got
can build
now.
Trains
okay,
on Train Simulator, but not the other train games, he was telling you. Okay. You can build levels, that is.
Okay. I understood the part of a lot of the levels. I didn't. That's what I missed, that he's doing it on Train Simulator.
And then he was telling you about another game that we got on the iPad that, according to the description, you had all kinds of things that you could blow up, and you picked the thing and you could blow it up. But it turns out that to actually blow up anything, you had to do in-app purchases, so they were all locked, and you couldn't actually blow up.
Oh, this whole thing. You know what? I need a rant on frickin' in-app purchases. The other day, oh my god, this whole thing is ridiculous.
Go ahead, and we'll just include this. Welcome, everybody. It's Curmudgeon's Corner. Go ahead.
What? You want me to start already? Where are you going? Where's he going? Well, apparently, we just started the show. We went into a cold open today. So
it's Tuesday, everybody. December 10th, just after 3 UTC. Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner, everyone. I'm Sam Enter. This is Yvonne Bo. And that's Alex.
Hello. And that's Alex, obviously. Remember, my Twitter is at IamBo. Sam at Apples May. Okay. Email us, please. Make sure that, you know, any comments, questions, anything. AplesMay@AplesMay.com. Best email to reach us. Get the feedback. We go through it. We talk about it. We always like to get feedback. It's great. You know, even if I get into a Twitter war with anybody or a discussion or whatever, it's still great. It's very enlightening, and it's a good thing. It's a good chance to have a discussion with people who are passionate about their subjects and other so forth. I mean, you know, this year, apparently, I've gotten into discussions with just about everybody on some.
Yvonne and I were in the midst of figuring out what we were going to talk about when Alex was talking about all kinds of stuff. And then he included a little bit about a game that he was playing, but a whole bunch of sections were locked, and that was because they required in-app purchases. So Yvonne was about to rant on in-app purchases.
Because the other day, right, I've played. So actually, a friend of mine gifted me a new version of the Apple TV. You know, I had the old one, mm-hmm. Okay? And I'd used that one for a long time, but I'd never gotten a newer one. And a friend of mine gave to me one as a gift. Okay, so I plugged it in. I've got everything set up. The one thing I did have to do is that I had to get because my TV is actually mounted in the wall, and there was only one HDMI cable going through there. I actually got a little HDMI switch.
Yeah,
which actually is working pretty good. This is actually simplified. I managed to simplify our setup using that HDMI box. So that actually is all good. So I did that. And I got it set up. But, you know, I'm playing with all the little features on it and whatnot. One of the things I realized is because of the mirroring from the iPhone that, you know, and I had heard about this, but I hadn't tried it, is that you could actually play games. And you could display them on the TV, which is kind of cool. Okay, all right. So I went and I had these car racing games, which I like. And I was using Real Racing, which used to be made by a company called Firemint, which EA bought about a couple of years ago. Okay, and the game was really cool. They had Real Racing and then they had Real Racing 2. So I go and I'm like, well, I heard there's a new version, so I downloaded Real Racing 3. And I go to the app, and I see it says free. And all of a sudden, I say, uh-oh.
Yep.
I'm like, that can't be good. Okay, all right? And so then I realize, I start using the damn app, and everything is a fucking in-app purchase. Oh, you want upgrades? In-app purchase. Oh, you want this? In-app purchase. I mean, it basically turned into... Forget about the game being Garfield. It turned it to, oh, you can be better
you
if you...
said a bad word.
So I did.
So you said a part of a turret word.
I'm gonna be punished by about that. I'm sorry. But anyway, this is so irritating. What's the point? I'd rather pay $20 for the game so I can be challenged on my skills and not... You know, it's like all these darn games. Now they're turning. They just want you to pay for you to get to the next level. That doesn't help.
Yeah. So first of all, I want to just say I completely and totally agree with you. Let me play devil's advocate and explain what my understanding is of why this is the big trend in these, and it's because most people aren't like you and me and wouldn't even consider spending $10, let alone $20, on some of these games.
Well, I totally disagree.
But
they just sold, you know, Xbox One and PlayStation 4
10 million
damn game consoles just got sold, damn it. Okay?
Well, but here's the thing. It's because the expectation has been built, and that this is, you know, many people consider this to be Apple's fault, but the expectation has been built that games...
Are
worth at most like. Ready to save? Okay. At the best, worth like a couple bucks. And if you price your game at $10-$20 on iOS, you're not going to sell very many because people are going to be like, hey, I can get all these other games.
I got to tell you something. What I've seen like right now is that, you know what, fine. There's a lot of big cheapskates out there that freaking like, well, not even cheap. No, they're just cheaters. I don't understand. They'd rather pay in order to, you know, it's like I had a friend of mine that once we went to dance lessons and want to bribe the teacher to get her to the next level. I'm like, wait a minute. The whole point is to learn. What the hell are you bribing a guy for? We didn't come in here. It's just...
Yeah, but but here's what happens. They can get you in for free. You get the free game. And usually there's enough in there to sort of tease you and get you so like, oh, this is fun. I want to play more. And then usually there's a way like if you like play for thousands and thousands of hours, you can earn points or something and buy the crap in-game without an in-app purchase sometimes. But really, to jump forward at anything approaching a reasonable pace, or in some cases at all, you have to do the purchase. And what they do is they hook you on you, and they become they're after you getting addicted, and they're after an income stream instead of that one-time pop.
I know, but it's just, it's retarded. I mean, it's
just, I'll tell you what I do.
It's irritating. It's annoying. Why I barely play any more games anymore. It's like freaking games like Farmville and all this other crap and whatever. I remember I started playing, well, okay, do the farm, I'll build it, whatever. Oh, well, you know, all they were after is like me to pay more money, and there was no skill involved. And I went, wait a minute, it's not because I built the best farm, I planted it out, it's better. It's how much money they go and they milk out of me of this stupid crap. I'm like, I stopped playing. And that's why I've stopped playing a whole bunch of this crap, because of this nonsense.
I'll tell you, my setup we've got a built-in sensor today. Anyway, Alex, let us talk. The way I have my setup is I
got to tell you stuffy very quick.
Yes.
Oh, Yvonne said a bad word.
Yes, I know Yvonne said a bad word.
It wasn't a turret word.
It wasn't a turret word. It was a different bad word.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was stupid.
It was a stupid word. Okay.
And it was stupid.
Oh, okay. He said stupid? Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Consider yourself chastised, Yvonne.
Okay. All right. I'm chastised.
No, I have mine set up. So I use there's a restrictions in iOS that's essentially parental controls, but I don't use it for parental controls. I use it to turn off in-app purchases. I also turn off deleting apps, and that one is parental controls. That's to keep Alex from accidentally deleting stuff. But right. I turn off in-app purchases. And what that means is that if at any point you're in a game and you try to push the in-app purchase button, it says, sorry, they're turned off. And so, like, in order to do it, and I have occasionally done it, you have to actually go in, undo that setting, make the in-app purchase, and then go back. It basically puts an even higher level of resistance. So, like, I don't even want to be tempted by these things. And then when I'm considering apps, like, every once in a while when I'm bored, I'll go looking to see, hey, are there any cool new apps I should play with?
Right.
Either game or productivity or whatever.
Yeah.
I only look at the paid apps list. I don't look at the free apps at all. The only times I get free apps are as if I've heard other people either online or in person talking about the free app and saying that it's really good and that I should check it out. I will never just look through that free app list for stuff to play with, because I know it's all going to be this kind of crap.
Yeah,
and I just don't want to deal with it. I'm completely with you. I would much rather, if there's an app that's interesting to me, I am willing to pay $20 if it's a really good productivity app. I'm not a gamer. I'm not really into those things. So I'm probably not going to pay $20 for a game. I'll pay $20 for a really good productivity app, and I'll probably pay $5 or $10 for a really good game. There's a Mickey Mouse castle thing that looked good and had good reviews that was like $10 or something, and I bought that. And you know, Alex likes watching me play it all the time, and my daughter likes it, and so you know, okay, I paid for that game, and I'm okay with that. But I refuse to be nickel and dimed by games that, you know, cost a buck or free, and then, you know, charge you for this and charge you for that and charge you for this and charge you for that. It's like, no, that's ridiculous.
Nah, it's just retarded. I just got so irritated the other day. I was just, I freaking went back and just deleted the damn game.
The other thing is that they're also,
well, actually, I did delete it, but I just still have it. I just stopped playing it.
Yeah. There's also apps that do a subscription model where it's like, you know, however much per month or whatever to use it. Back the very first navigation app I used on the iPhone before like a whole bunch of them came out was a subscription. You paid like $1 a month or something like that. And I did that for a while. I'm like, oh, okay, this is worth $1 a month to me. But then when the others came out,
it just starts getting, you know, $1 a month here, and then the other buck, and then the buck, and the buck, and, you know, geez.
Yeah. And I'm like, I'd much rather, you know, and I have done this. I bought the Garmin navigation apps, and they're sometimes on sale for cheaper than this, but I ended up paying, like, you know, $40-$50 for that navigation app. And it's worth it, and I like it, and I paid for it, and they're not nickel and diming me with monthly fees. I will say though, the Garmin, is also annoying because they did in-app purchases to unlock various features. So you got the basic navigation, but oh, okay, you want traffic? You pay for that. You want, you know, 3D buildings? You pay for that. And it's like, really? And I did end up getting it because I wanted those things, but like, it pissed me off royally that they did that. I'm like, just charge $70 instead of $50 up front, you know?
I agree. I'm with you. It's just, you know, this is, well, anyway, I mean, I'm okay with certain subscription models. Listen, but this whole in-app purchase thing, I was just,
I understand there's some things subscriptions, okay, I can buy subscriptions in some cases. It's not my preferred model, but I can understand why it's necessary in some cases.
And I mean, I can understand, enough, like, I'll for example, I mean, I'm actually with mapping updates, I'm okay with it, simply because there's continuous work that has to be done. I mean, if you pay only an upfront fee, I mean, it takes a lot of data gathering and continuous work in order to keep them updated. So I get that, okay? All right. But there's for other stuff, it's just, I mean, no. For a damn game, no way. No.
Yeah.
I just want to pay the fee and that's it. Period.
That's
okay.
Right.
Unless you're going to give me the next version of every game for the rest of your life on the freaking sub. But even no, I don't want that. No, no.
Well, here's the reality with a game. I mean, the reality of the game is you get a brand new game. You're probably going to play it a while and be excited and interested in a while. And then after a few weeks,
I'm bored.
You're bored and you're ready to move on to something else. It's not
that's
like
right.
You're going to be paying a monthly subscription for the next 3 years.
Damn straight.
You know, so yeah, you want to pay your couple bucks and get your few hours of entertainment out of it and then be done.
Yeah.
Okay. So, enough about in-app purchases. Just to fill you guys in on the plan for the day, Yvonne and I both agreed that we want to follow up on the automation discussion we had last week because we had a Twitter discussion with our listener, Bruce, and we want to continue that a little bit on here, at least amongst ourselves. Yeah, Bruce isn't here to defend himself, so we get to, like, you know, infuriate him some more, probably. although he made some really good points, so we want to talk about them.
He did make some good points, so yeah.
We want to have, you know, Nelson Mandela died in the last week. We'll talk a little bit about that. And that's really as far as we've gotten in our planning. I wanted to mention a few quick things, because honestly, we'll probably fill up time. We'll see. But I wanted to mention Alex, who's climbing on top of me right now. I'd mentioned a few weeks ago we were moving him to a new school. I just wanted to give, like, the 10-second update that says it's working out really well. He's noticeably much happier than he was. He'll still not say he likes school. Alex, do you like school? He's shaking his head no. But he's much happier than he was at the old school. So I just wanted to give that update. An update on Bitcoin as well, and Bruce also chimed in on this from last week. I'd been talking last week about Mt. Gox and the process of getting signed up and blah, 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 and Bruce responded with, are you crazy? Don't use Mt. Gox. Use Coinbase. I'm paraphrasing. But by the time he'd said that, between when we recorded our show and when I put out the show last Friday, I'd actually finally gotten verified by Mt. Gox, and then I went to actually do the funding of the account and discovered that the only way to do it that was not dependent on you already having some sort of account somewhere else that was set up with Bitcoin was a wire transfer. And Mt. Gox was based in Japan. And, you know, so you have to do a wire transfer through your bank, which, you know, I looked up my bank. It's like a $35 fee to do a wire transfer.
Jesus, for real? Well, it's an international wire transfer.
It's an international wire transfer. And then, not only that, but they mentioned that there may be additional amounts taken out for taxes on the receiving country's end.
Good Lord.
And so, like, you know, in order to get my $20 that I wanted here, I probably would have had to spend, you know, $35 for the wire transfer, the $20 I wanted, probably another $20 or $30 worth of fees for the receiving country. I don't know what the hell else. And not only that, in order to initiate the wire transfer at my bank, it's actually, I have a credit union, not a bank, but I can't do it online. I have to call them or go into a branch to do it and fill out some paperwork. You know, and so I guess if I call them, I can just tell them all the information. But there's this form that they have you print out, and you fill out all the...
This is your other thing. I could do a wire transfer international, like, just on my computer, but...
From your bank. But anyway, at this point, this is not, like, a need I'd ever had before. So it's not like when I was shopping around for
international wire transfers before, so that's why I'm like.
Yeah, like if this was something I did regularly, I'd make sure I had a bank account where it was.
As a matter of fact, the funniest thing is the last time I just did a wire transfer was last Friday, as a matter of fact.
Well, there you go. But anyway, around this point, I was like, screw this. And so I went and looked and like, okay, what's a U.S.-based one of these? And it took me about 10 seconds to find Coinbase and find that they had a list of clients that included people I'd heard of. And I'm like, okay, I'll do this. And I went to their website, signed up for an account in a couple seconds. As Bruce pointed out, they did have a feature where I could have been buying Bitcoin like 30 seconds later but that required you to give them your login information to your bank. And I'm like, you know, I'm just not going to do that right now. So I chose the option where they do the 10-cent deposits or whatever, like we talked about last week. And that takes a few days for that to happen. So I haven't actually gone and bought my first Bitcoin yet. But I should, by the time we talk next time, I should be able to be set up for that. Because I chose the method that takes 3 or 4 days to do instead of the method that I could have done it within 30 seconds. Just because I just didn't feel like giving my bank login ID and password to another site, you know?
I
did that with Mint at one point, which I haven't really used much lately, but it's like, it's just not something I feel super comfortable with. So I didn't do that. Anyway, so that's my Bitcoin update. Another quick update from a previous topic. We talked a few weeks ago about the coroner's report that said Arafat may have been poisoned by polonium radiation poisoning. There was another set of doctors who just completed a second investigation, and they determined he was not poisoned by radiation.
Okay.
So we've got conflicting stuff at this point, and who the hell knows what happened. And that's the end of the update for that.
I mean, Arafat wasn't young either. I mean, he may just have died. I mean, you know.
It happens.
It happens. You know, I mean, president of Argentina died. I mean, I had, unfortunately, two,
you know, I hate
two good
to
friends of mine over the last 4 years die unexpectedly. I mean, they were not.
Yeah.
They were not over 50. They were under 55. I mean,
I hate to break it to everybody, but every single human being on Earth does die eventually.
Yeah, I mean,
and when you get up there in age, it's much more likely to happen sooner. But as you pointed out, even young people, it can be completely unexpected and out of the blue, and it doesn't necessarily mean that there's something nefarious going on. Sometimes it just happens.
It just happens.
I remember a few years ago, I mentioned this on a show back then. There was someone who worked for me when I was a manager at my current job, and must have been 22, 23, just died in his sleep, you know? And
yeah, I remember that.
I don't know if I mentioned it on the show because it was, you know, it wasn't my place to sort of make that public, but yeah, it was, you know, an aneurysm in his brain or something. He went to bed and he didn't wake up. So it happens. But yeah, who knows what happened to Arafat? I mean, there were some suspicious things around his death. Who knows? They're now conflicting reports. Two other quickie things before we take a break and get on to the more realish topics. I've mentioned on the show before, I've got a 2-monitor setup at home. I got home from work today and my external monitor, not the one that's built into my iMac, but my external monitor was blank and it was not turning on. And I'm like, what the hell? What the hell is going on here? And I unplugged it. I plugged it in. I unplugged it. I plugged it in. I turned it off.
You made sure that it's all plugged in.
I did all that stuff. And nothing at all. I go to the control panels and it doesn't even recognize that there's a second monitor plugged in. I'm like, crap. The monitor's not that old. It's like I got it for one or two Christmases ago, I think. I don't know. It was a present. Either for Christmas or birthday or Father's Day or something. But it's like less than 2 years old. And I'm like, monitors are supposed to last a lot longer than 2 years. You know, there's some electronic devices that after 2 years, you're like, oh, well, it's time. It's up. But not for a monitor. Monitors last freaking forever. Or at least they're supposed to. So I'm like, ah, then I thought, hey, let me try. I plugged it into, my work laptop. Monitor worked. So okay. What does that mean? It means it's my damn computer that's not recognizing the monitor anymore. So now I'm going to have to do more troubleshooting. I don't know what's up. I don't know if it's something fixable or whether it's actually something broken. I don't know. I have to play with it more. I discovered this like, you know, an hour before we were coming on to record the show. So I haven't had time to really deeply troubleshoot. But on the computer is a relatively old computer, but still, it's not like this is something I've plugged and unplugged and the port should be bad because I don't know what's up. But it's frustrating because I've been using a multi-monitor setup now for a couple of years, and it feels so incredibly confining to be on this single screen now. I'm like, because I normally have like the recording stuff up on one screen and like a web browser up on the other, and I can't do that right now, and it's driving me nuts. So I just wanted to share. And then the other thing to mention is, here in Washington State where I am, the last few days it's been really freaking cold, but nothing like what the East Coast is getting hit by now with like all the snow and other stuff like that. You know, there was a little bit of snow in the forecast, but then it didn't really pan out, and there might still be some tonight, but it's not supposed to be much. You know, but hey, it's winter here, and I presume, Yvonne, you're probably under feet of snow there in Miami, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's just horrible. I mean, I think it's like right now. Let me tell you quickly. It's 77.
Yeah, there you go. See,
it's terrible.
Frigid.
I mean, it's freezing.
Frigid.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, very, very cold.
Okay. The other topic that you mentioned that I don't know much about, so maybe you just want to say a couple quick words before we take a break. Protests in the Ukraine. I have not been following this.
Well, the protests in the Ukraine, basically, there was a lot of people that were upset with the president. But what happened was, you know, people have been really upset about Russia bullying all their neighbors. And so he wanted to sign a customs union with the EU. I mean, a lot of people wanted. And the president, basically under pressure from Russia, basically declined to sign it, okay? Because Putin is like anti, you know, that crap. And people just exploded because they were just like, I mean, they were fed up with a whole bunch of other stuff. But this was like the last straw. And so basically they've been like – I mean they've occupied the center of the Capitol and like basically have barricaded themselves in there and are basically – they took a statue of Lenin and knocked it over. I did see that. And I was like trying to figure out why, because they were basically targeting the Russians because they were like fed up with them. That's why. So you know, this whole thing with like the Russians flexing their muscles with a lot of their neighbors, with Georgia and now with Ukraine, it's just something that a lot of people, or neighbors, are just pretty much fed up. And the problem is that, I mean, the Russians have been real dicks about this. I mean, they've been just going around and, throwing their weight around, like especially with energy and like cutting off energy and other things to their neighbors and so forth, because for them it's not a thing to turn other people to supply energy, but especially gas. It's just kind of it's very difficult to get it to where you want it to go. And so, you know, it's just something that was just interesting, the fact that the people were just, you know, they were just that fed up with the Russians that they basically took to the streets and just were just protesting in mass and have basically shut the Capitol right
and
now.
Speaking of those kinds of things that I have not been following as much as perhaps I should have, same kind of thing's been happening in Thailand, hasn't it?
I have not been following what's been going on in Thailand. I only went and dug I earlier today, because when I saw that they knocked over the Lenin statue, I was like, I wanted to dig deeper into what the heck was going on, and that's how I know about that. But I have not been following up on what's going on in Thailand.
Anyway, let's take a break finally. And then we'll come back and we'll talk about, we'll start with the automation stuff that we got into, the discussion with Bruce on, and then a little bit about Mandela before we end the show. We'll be back after this.
Ready for the test, Dracula?
I'm ready, Frankenstein. Then let us begin.
Creepy Classic celebrates the classic horror and science fiction films from the silent era through the 1960s, and retro TV horror from the 1950s to the 1970s. Visit creepyclassics.com for all your classic video needs. And when you buy something, tell Ron that the curmudgeons say hello.
Okay, we're back.
We're back.
So,
better than ever.
So for those of you who didn't listen last week, we had a little bit of a discussion that started out with the delivery drones that a certain e-commerce company is producing, but then rapidly branched into automation in general and the fact that technology is improving. So we're going to have self-driving cars. We're going to have more fully automated manufacturing. We're going to have all kinds of things that right now are done by manual labor. We mentioned fast food. The technological ability will be there to have many of these things done in a fully automated fashion sooner rather than later.
Right.
Yeah, we might be talking 10, 15 years out, really. And some of this may be later. And we started talking about how the implications of this towards the workforce and how many people will potentially be put out of work by this, and jobs that wouldn't necessarily come back or easily be retrainable, because you're taking sort of low skill labor and eliminating the need to have human beings do it.
Yeah, and one of the things that I know that we mentioned this, but you know, it's here to reiterate. I mean, we're bringing up this not because we have any prediction that this is what's going to happen. I just think it's a concern, and it's been a concern that's been brewing for many reasons. You know, I think because a lot of people that have had lower educations, their wages have been very stagnant. And, you know, we've had a situation where we've had a lot of people that just have not been able to get, to move up, and they have not, and more. It's just that I think that a lot of people who have been in middle lower classes have been feeling that their standard of living has been going down, and there's that perception, and you know what's going to happen with these subsequent changes.
So let me point out the insight that Bruce added, which I think is actually a very valid one that we should take note of. Which is that if you look historically at the record, the kinds of fears you've talked about just now,
they've adjusted for them.
People have been afraid of these same kind of economic turmoil at every technological advancement.
I know, and
each time the sort of prophecies of the doomsayers, which I guess we were a little bit last week, did not come true, because what's happened, for instance, is. Okay, yes, you can more fully automate farming and you don't need as many farmers. And so those people have to do something else. Oh no, what will they do? Well, guess what? Hey, they can go to the cities. They can do all this stuff. They can do this. Manufacturing becomes more automated. Well, people, you don't need all these people making things by hand, but guess what? You need people to run the machines. And so what's happened in time after time after time of these technological innovations is, yes, they've been disruptive at the time they happen, but people do adapt, and you can argue a little bit, and we did with Bruce a little bit about how fast does that adaptation take? Is it generations, or is it some case just a few years when people are able to do? And I think one of the questions here, and I guess it's always the question with these technological innovations, is it different this time? And I guess the answer is, you know, people have always predicted.
I don't know.
People are always saying this time is different, this time is different, and almost always they're wrong. And hopefully that'll be the case this time. I certainly like would prefer, like I said last week, my preferred thing on all this automation, yeah, automate the hell out of everything. Automate my job. Let me kick back with my feet up and push a button every once in a while to make sure the robot is doing what it has to do and still pay me. That would be cool. You know?
I think the one thing, and here's a reason why I think the reason I've been more concerned, like today, for example, I posted this article that I saw on Twitter because there's been a lot of protests. There's been a number of groups protesting in the Bay Area specifically, okay, about, you know, the technology workers driving up the cost of living so much that all of the people that really need to serve the technology industry can't afford to freaking live around there anymore. Okay, all right, and aren't working in a tech company, okay? I mean, anybody who's working in the service industry just can't afford, you know, rent, okay, to live anywhere remotely close to where you need to do these service jobs. And how, and it's one of these things where it's like, I mean, even though we may be reducing those number of service jobs, I mean, what happens to those people? I mean, right now, they, even with those jobs, they can't afford to freaking eat. Now, as Bruce said, listen, most of these changes have generated other changes where people have wound up in other locations. But
let me make some of those points for him. And maybe we should have called him to see if he was be on the show, but we didn't think about it. Sorry about that, Bruce. No, it's not just that, but also if you look at standard of living, as opposed to just income or whatever, the automation revolution, and before that, the industrial revolution itself has resulted in all kinds of technology that has improved the overall standard of living of everybody, including the poor. There are things that we have today that just didn't exist at all that improve all of our standard of living. And the prices have dropped to the point where even the poor can afford them for many things. Things that used to be the province of only the elite, if they existed at all, are now widely available to even low-income people. One example out of many, cell phones. You know, and maybe not everybody can have the latest and greatest wonderful smartphone, but a base model cell phone, you know, you can go to any store and pick up a pay-as-you-go phone, you know?
And I get that, but one of the things that I said about these changes is that, I mean, with some of these changes, what we've done, I feel that this is just my feeling. It's like, okay, great. So I'm giving DirecTV, all this other stuff, okay? But on the opposite end, look at the stuff that I feel like we've been taking away because of stagnating wages and earnings. Okay, great. So we drove down the cost of all this technology, but yet at the same time, these same people can't afford to send their kids to college anymore. And where 30 years ago they could,
mm-hmm.
On one income. So I'm like, what the heck have we done? I mean, we created all this knowledge and all this base and all of a sudden made it less accessible to most people. So I don't know if that's such a great trade-off in the end.
And one of the questions I see here, and, you know, like I said, hopefully the answer is that adaptation will happen again in a way that ends up being positive for everybody. And I was being a little bit flip before when I was talking about sitting with my feet up pushing a button, because that's not what you generally expect, but you hope that some new, you know, when you take away one thing for humans to do, humans will find other things to do that need human beings to do. Where was I going with that?
I don't know.
I lost myself again. What you expect, what you hope for here, is that the adaptation does happen and the new technology comes out, you know, all these people, okay, yeah, everybody's out of work who used to, let's say, deliver packages, because you've got delivery drones in the air, on the ground, you've got self-driving cars, you automate the warehouses, you know, so that you can order your purchase online and no human being has to touch that before it arrives at your front desk, okay? So, or front door. So all of those people are out of jobs. okay, you expect that now that that's freed up, some new object of human endeavor will open up that maybe not those very people that very moment will be able to go out and get a new job. But after a few years, when the sort of whole economy reshuffles itself, there'll be plenty of productive stuff for those
people. And I know, it's like, look, I think about 100 years ago, for example, a cruise ship, in order to power itself, right, you know, you had all these people, basically, like a massive amount of people and downstairs fucking, like, dumping coal into burners. We don't have those people anymore, for example.
Right.
Or other jobs like that, for example. I mean, it's just, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, yeah, I get that. And we transferred those people into other jobs and doing other things.
And the one question I have this time is the one thing that I can see potentially being different than some of the previous waves of innovation is in the past, you like when we talked about the Industrial Revolution, we were basically not changing that jobs were needed, We were trading off one set of low-skilled jobs for another.
Right.
So you don't need tons and tons of people in the fields doing farming, but guess what? You need tons and tons of people running machines in the factories. Or in some cases, it went the other direction. You don't need the high-skilled artisans making things by hand because you have the machines doing it, but guess what? You need even more people running the machines, and they require even less training than the high-skilled people they replaced. This time, I see things going potentially in the opposite direction as that move anyway, where you're taking away low-skilled jobs, and what replaces it? High-skill people who are required to program, design the automation. Is that a difference? If the jobs you're eliminating are all low-skilled jobs and the new jobs you're creating are all high-skilled jobs, that seems to me like a fundamentally different equation than cases where you're eliminating high-skilled jobs. Or cases where you're eliminating low-skilled jobs but creating more low-skilled jobs. And that's where I think the potential for a difference exists. Now, again, it may well happen that, hey, this brings up all kinds of new low-skilled jobs that end up being needed. Or maybe the answer is we do succeed in training everybody up for more higher-skilled jobs. But this comes back to, I made the flip comment last week, you know, we don't need everybody to be a physics professor. And that was just a shortcut for saying that, you know, look, there are some people who are going to be good at the high skill academic things that require high academic skills or artisan skills even, or anything like that. And there are going to be people who aren't. I mean, there's a fundamental bell curve that applies to these things. And, you know, can you find useful work for the people on the lower end of that bell curve who may be wonderful people but aren't going to be doing a super high-skill job that requires a lot of thought behind it?
Because
the automation, you know, we may eventually automate the things that require high levels of thought as well. But all the first things that are going to be automated are the things that are manual labor, essentially manual labor.
I think here's the one thing. I mean, look, everybody keeps saying how it's important to have a college education or a higher level of education in order to adapt to this new economy, okay, and the changes that are coming, which I get that. I mean, if we want to make those people productive with all that automation that's coming, you need that, okay? And I think most people agree. The problem is that I think that we're making education to a level where it's almost like unaffordable for a significant portion of the population. And how the hell, I mean, we're kind of like putting them in a pincer movement.
Well, but
by doing this,
even there, like, yeah, even if you made education completely and totally free, you know, there are some people who are going to go to the level of graduate degrees, and
people who aren't. I agree. But the thing is, it's a thing of accessibility is what I'm saying. I mean, if just a lot of people cannot have access to it because there aren't enough slots, because it's too expensive. I'll give you an example. Like over here in the state of Florida, I remember like 25 years ago. Okay, you applied to the University of Florida. I mean, you got in, period. okay? It's like, I mean, if you were a resident of the state, right now they're rejecting like 80-90% of the candidates, okay? People, I mean, I see people scrambling and fighting for freaking slots, okay? And the cost is so much higher. It used to be when somebody wanted to get a college education, they had access to it, no problem. And if they didn't get a college education, they could get a job that did not require the education and still earn a decent living. So, I don't know. At some point, listen, if we're turning into a society that everybody's going to really require more advanced levels of education, whether it's in college, whether it's at a technical school, whether it's something, whatever the hell it is, we need to provide it, and we're not doing it.
Well, okay. And my question is more fundamental: is even if you could provide it to everybody, like, is there? I guess it's one of these things where, if you vastly increase the supply of people with that level of education, you'll figure out things to do with it
that you probably didn't.
You probably can't do today. Maybe that's the way out of this: is when you automate everything. Just make sure you educate the hell out of everybody, and you end up producing things that you wouldn't even imagine possible today. And that would be the wonderful way out of this. And I hope that's the way it plays out. And I think you ended your comments on this is, hey, this is just something to watch. And I think it's one of these things where, yeah, maybe there is a wonderful way out of this that results in everybody being better off and improvement across the board, but there are many other ways that this could play out.
That's my point.
That might end up very much more negative.
I'm worried about the ones where we wind up in a freaking class warfare, okay, and a society that is very stratified, okay. That's my concern, okay. When you create, I was seeing some more information about, the fact that our generation. Our age group, 35 to 44, is seeing the widest gaps. Our income between the higher and lower levels has had the biggest widening, it's by a substantial amount. Okay, that we've got much higher income inequality in our age group than in many decades before, and that's my concern. I am really concerned about that. I don't think that you have a good democracy when wages are that. I mean, I'm not advocating communism, but
Ivan, you're a damn communist.
Yeah, yeah.
Give it up.
Yeah, exactly. But I also do believe firmly that when. Income inequality gets to such a bad level where hardworking people cannot afford the basics. They cannot, work hard, retire, get healthcare, and have an education. That kind of shit creates warfare in society. It creates more crime. It creates civil unrest. Okay, it just does. I mean, look at countries where where you have the biggest disparities are ones where society is the most restless, okay? And it's just historically proven that way. And that's what I would like to avoid.
And so then the question, of course, becomes then, you start out like, okay, let's just watch it and see what happens. And if it goes the good way, great. If it doesn't, what the hell do you do? Because all of the options at that point have potential major downsides. Like, heavy ham-handed government intervention tends to be exactly that, ham-handed, with more negative side effects. Like, you may have all the good intentions in the world, but they try to do something and they just mess it up and make it worse. The government is very often not the solution. I'm not precluding that it never is, but certainly a lot of the times, government just screws it up more. Even when they're trying to help. And that applies to a whole bunch of different things. Like, you could do massive income redistribution. Well, there are all kinds of problems with that. You could have, various limitations or laws that say you have to do this or you have to do that. That has huge implications on personal freedom and economic freedom and all kinds of other things. So I don't like those answers either, but... and this is where, so you don't want to do any of those kinds of things unless you get to a point where I guess you really have to, because here's the bottom line. At some point, if those discrepancies get bad enough, those kinds of things are going to happen whether you want them to or not, because if you don't orchestrate some way where they happen smoothly and calmly and over time, then they're going to happen abruptly and violently.
Well, yeah, that was my point, that I'd like to avoid that outcome.
You're not one who advocates violent revolution
No, not really. But I think, you know what? I think
decapitate the main, all the rich people, give away their money.
Yeah, nah, not cool. I think that people, you know what? There's certain basic needs, okay, in a society, and if we, you know, look, if we, you know, have such an amount of wealth, I think that there are certain basic needs that should not be denied, okay, all right, to people. I'm not talking about, you know, additional stuff. I'm just talking about the basics. I'm talking about education, healthcare, housing, you know, those. I mean, just keep those three. And, I mean, I think that as – I mean, when you deny those to significant groups of people, okay, and food, by the way, I forgot about that. Pretty important one. If you deny those to a significant group of people, okay, or make them struggle to get it, I mean, you're really causing a lot of social problems. That's my take. I'm not telling people to go and like give them like, you know, Ferraris, okay, all right, or something. That's not what I'm advocating. But I think that, you know, people should be able to, if they are working and doing something productive, to be able to afford those, okay, at the bare minimum, and, you know, without having to struggle to get those. Everything else is optional.
Yeah, well, and you know, again, I get to the point where, yeah, I tend to agree that those three or four things you mentioned as minimums, I do believe in some sort of safety net that is, you know, keeps people from, you know, sort of falling through and having problems with those four basic things. However, I am very wary about most solutions that are offered to those things, because I think historically we've seen time and time again, even with the best intentions, the efforts that are put out there to solve or help those often end up having extremely negative side effects as well. And so you just have to be incredibly careful, and I think you have to be wary of solutions that say, you know, hey, we're going to do this and we're going to solve hunger, or we're going to solve homelessness or whatever, because these things tend not to work and tend to cause all kinds of problems too. Maybe not always. Maybe not always. And you could make some very strong cases that a lot of the social engineering stuff of the New Deal has had a net positive effect, even though it was incredibly intrusive and is to this day. You could also make an argument that the best thing you could possibly do for the economy is to undo the New Deal, and that the overall health of everybody would be better as a result. I don't know the answers to those questions. I think you can do some comparisons between multiple different countries that have tried different approaches and get some insight there. But fundamentally, I don't know the answer. But I do think that you have to be very careful when you're trying to do these grand projects to fix, you know, the social ills of the world, because there are always going to be social ills of the world. You're not going to create a utopia. And when you try to create a utopia, you end up screwing other things up.
Anyway, so, I'm not trying to create a utopia. I'm just trying to make sure people, hungry people, get food. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I don't want a 4-year-old in this country that can't get food, okay, or can't get health care, okay. I mean, that's what I'm trying to avoid. I mean, this is the one thing I get irritated with people. This is not fucking creating utopia, okay. This is just a thing of basic needs. You know what? It's a same thing that every other fucking country in the world almost provides. Okay, all right? The Canadians have fucking universal health care. And you know what? As far as I can tell, they didn't create a society of hoodlums. and losers. Nor the Swedes, nor the Swiss, okay? Nor the Germans, okay? I could go on and on. I mean, I don't get it why people in the U.S. keep taking healthcare as some kind of fucking privilege.
Well, the argument that people would make, and I'm going to play devil's advocate for a minute here, is you mentioned some of these countries, and like let's look at Europe. They have extensive social safety nets. They also have extensive unemployment. They have.
But that's why I actually picked the countries that don't have extensive unemployment when I mention them. Safety nets can go too far I understand that.
When I
went to Europe, here's the difference between what I'm talking about and what happens in Europe. Because you can't take Europe directly. I go to Spain, for example. You have a child, you get a 1,000 euro check every month for having that child. Okay, you know what? Dude, how are you incenting somebody to work if the guy's getting $1,200 a month just for having a fucking baby? Right, I know guys that went just, I had three babies. I don't have to work. I mean, it's like everything. That's what I'm saying. I'm not trying.
On the healthcare people would argue that, okay, yes, but the innovation in the healthcare space is coming from the United States where there's all kinds of additional profit motive.
You know what? And we spend three times as much healthcare as money as a lot of countries on healthcare and have worse outcomes. Less life expectancy, less this, less that. I think the one thing about the innovation in the U.S. about healthcare is overstated. What we've got is one hell of a fucking expensive healthcare system. And you know what? And the outcomes from it are not that great. That's the problem that we got. Okay? I just don't agree that we're getting our money's worth for all the damn money we spend on healthcare.
Okay. Anything else to wrap this up, or shall we move on?
Nah, let's move on.
Okay, let's take another break. We'll talk briefly about Nelson Mandela before wrapping things up. Back after this.
This is a break. Oh, yes, this is a break. This is a break, because no one gave me any suggestions. I told you. I warned you, so this is a break. This is a wonderful break, a wonderful break. Yes, indeed, this is a break. This is a break in the middle of Curmudgeon's Corner. Yes, this is a break. Yes, yes, this is a break. Break, 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 break. Yes, 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 this is a break. Yes, this is a break. Break, 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 break. Yes, it is a break. And now the break is over.
Okay, here we are. So after, you know, a long time where everybody expected it could come at any moment, Nelson Mandela passed away this week. I do want to mention, like, I've been really annoyed for really the last year that we've had this Nelson Mandela death watch, because all the time it's like, he's in the hospital. What's going to happen? Is he about to die? Is he blah, 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 blah,
blah? Well,
blah,
I put it this way. I think Nelson Mandela was sick and tired of it himself. Okay. All right. Which is why he decided just to go fucking home. Okay. True. All right.
At least his family was. I don't know how conscious and into it he was in the last 6-9 months. That's been unclear. But, you know, clearly, like, you know, it bothered the hell out of me. It's like, okay, tell us when he actually dies. He's an old man. He's sick. He's in his last days. Leave him the fuck alone. You know, and that bothered me for all this time. And I understand how so many people felt, you know, really connected and this was important to him. But like, really, you know, we really didn't need updates every other day on, you know, how he was doing that day. And it only broke into the U.S. consciousness every once in a while. Listening to BBC, it seemed like I heard about it all the time. And it's like, so that bothered me to begin with. Now that he's actually dead, okay, good. Not good.
Oh, okay.
I said that being correctly.
Good. Oh, yeah, great. No,
but
now he's dead. There
you
go.
Now it's an appropriate time to do the retrospectives and to talk about, you know, how he's impacted the world and all of this kind of stuff. Alex is standing on top of a portable air conditioning unit growling at his sister.
Well, that's good.
There you go. He's growling happily at me.
Yes, growling happily.
Okay, I'm sorry.
So anyway, so we can...
No, he almost got him.
And here they go.
Okay.
Bye, guys.
Come play with the iPad. Come with me.
So... In terms of that legacy and everything, of course, what people have talked about, Alex, you need to stop growling. What people have talked about is basically how he managed the peaceful transition from apartheid to the post, quote unquote, post-racial South Africa.
Yes.
And he did that,
by the way, without becoming another African dictator.
Without becoming a dictator, and also one of the key innovations there, and it wasn't solely Mandela. I mean, Archbishop Desmond Tutu had a lot to do with this, and others as well, was the whole idea of the Reconciliation Commission, where they basically said up front, look, we're not going to go on some vindictive witch hunt to prosecute and put in jail people who did human rights abuses during the era of apartheid. Instead, we're going to have a system whereby people can basically admit to the things they did in exchange for amnesty, and we just get everything out there, everybody puts it out, and we move on. Yeah. And I think that was a very critical innovation where, you know, and maybe it's not quote-unquote justice, because people who did horrible things on all sides of that conflict... end up not being punished for it. But on the other hand, it ends the cycle of violence and yes. prevents it from happening in this case. Well, you know, you could argue that much of apartheid was violence, but it ends that cycle and says, we're done with that. We're opening a new chapter. Whatever happened, happened. It's the past. Let's figure out how we can do the best thing going forward. And I think that's like a critical part of this legacy here. But at the same time, I don't want to whitewash either. I mean, a number of people have mentioned that, you know, for the longest time, the ANC was listed as a terrorist organization by the United yes. States. People would argue whether that was ever appropriate. But during the time that Mandela was arrested, the ANC was indeed engaging in a coordinated effort of sabotage
yes,
where they were blowing up things. Now, from what I've read, the goal there was to sabotage infrastructure, not kill people. But still, it is still what would be considered today terrorist attacks.
It was violent resistance. I mean, it definitely was.
It was definitely violent resistance, and Mandela was an advocate of that. He did not deny it.
Yeah.
He said while he was in prison, he was offered the opportunity to get out if he would only renounce violence. And he said, no, I will not renounce violence until the violence of apartheid has ended. And so that's clearly there. And also the history of South Africa after Mandela hasn't been perfectly golden and wonderful either. There's been a lot of corruption. There have been a lot of problems. So it's not like he's the savior that solved everything. And he's being somewhat deified at the moment, and I think he did a lot of good things, but as usual in these things, it's like, it's really a more complex picture than that.
I think it is a more complex picture than that, but, and I think that obviously us from outside, probably, you know, it's like what happens many times when you're from the outside, sometimes you view things like through a little bit of rose-colored glasses, okay?
Well, because everybody wants to remember the
right.
the positive and what worked out well, and you don't really want to obsess over the things that were less
even
so.
But even in South Africa, despite the fact that, you know, like, as it is, like, you know, people have a more... nuanced view, okay, of it. I think that they all recognized. I mean, I think the not say all because never all, but a good majority of South Africans recognized that Mandela, what he did, you know, in terms of bringing the country from where it was to a democracy where recrimination and a massive cycle of violence that could have occurred did not, as did happen in a lot of other African countries over the last 60, you know, 70 years, was a big accomplishment. And he managed to do it in a way that very few other people have pulled off. And, you know, he really brought a country far more together than anybody else would have thought. So, You know, yeah. From that respect, he's got to get credit, because when you compare it against the, you know, I know he wasn't perfect, but when you compare it against the other comparisons that you can look at, I mean, you know, I don't think that anybody could have, I don't think anybody's done a job that as well as he managed to do in a very potentially what could have been a very violent reaction to the downfall of apartheid.
I would tend to agree, and I would say, you know, it's painfully obvious in many cases where there are a variety of conflicts today that we're missing a leader like that who can navigate that. Like,
absolutely.
You know, wouldn't it be great if we had a Mandela-type person on both sides of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict?
Oh, my God,
who are willing to, like, find a solution, yes, and move forward. Or for that matter, what's going on in Afghanistan, Pakistan, Iraq, or
Syria.
Syria, all of these places could really use a figure like this, you know, and like, you know, and as we said, he is a flawed, actual live human being, not a god, not a saint, but achieved a lot of good stuff. And I'll also mention, I just have to say this too. I feel whenever I'm on a topic like this, I feel woefully inadequate because, of course, both my parents are experts in Southern Africa.
Yes.
my father, I tweeted a link to, he was interviewed on Marketplace, which is a show on public radio about Mandela. I tweeted a link to that interview. My mother has had extensive experience in the region as well. And of course, I have my cousin who's a foreign policy expert. So whenever I talk about these kinds of issues, I feel woefully inadequate because as an amateur who just dabbles,
basically in the order rank of your family, you're the idiot in this subject.
I am the idiot in this subject. I have not followed it as even remotely as close as any of them. I follow at a distance. I read occasional thing occasionally, but I am by no means fully conversant in all the ins and outs. And I'm sure if any one of them happens to listen to this show, they can point out at least a dozen things where they probably slap their foreheads and are like, oh my God, I can't believe you said that. That's so wrong. And so I apologize for that.
And you can send us all the complaints and criticisms that you want to applesmay@applesmay.com.
There you go. And, anyway, so it's just an interesting, the other thing I'll note is the list of dignitaries that's going to the funeral is absolutely, like, it's like 50% of the heads of states on the planet.
Basically, what you're saying is if you wanted to do a terror attack where you fucking threw the planet into chaos, that now's the time?
Let's not suggest that. I was also looking at, like, who's on Air Force. As we're recording this, Air Force One is on the way there. Not only is the president there, Hillary Clinton's there, George W. Bush is there, a potpourri of congressional leaders are there.
Is Bill on Air Force? Is Bill Clinton?
Bill is taking a different plane to South Africa, but he's also going. We have every living president except George H.W. Bush, who couldn't go for health reasons, is going to be at that funeral. Every living ex-president of the United States. Prince Charles, the Prime Minister of Britain, a whole bunch of European heads of state. You know, this is going to be, and I've read a couple things about, like, you know, them getting security together in a few days to do this. I wouldn't even want to think about the world chaos that would involve if there was a major attack at the funeral or something like that, or even like Air Force One crashes or something, you know.
Air Force One crashing is another story. I mean, that would be crazy, totally off the wall. But, you know, just, yeah. I mean, yeah, this could be chaos if something happens. But I don't expect anything.
So by the time that we put out this show, people will know if anything crazy happened. Hopefully, nothing crazy happens.
Right.
We do not. You know, we do enjoy crazy things and talking about them, but we don't wish for them.
Yeah, you know, it's like we didn't have a show when September 11 happened. You know, we were on hiatus, so I don't know what we would have said afterwards. So I don't know, you know, but probably not. I'm pretty sure that we would have been quite distraught over the whole sequence of events.
I'm sure we would have been.
Yeah.
In any case, I think that's a show, Yvonne.
That's a wrap. Okay.
Yvonne gave you all the contact information at the beginning, and hey, guess what, guys? I don't know if it'll show up in this show or not, because I pick them randomly, but I have made a new break that includes the contact information.
Ooh, cool!
So
great!
You know, and when I put them in, I always roll a die to see which breaks to include, so it's got a one chance in 10 every time there's a break of that one coming up. And so, hey, a new break, finally. Anyway, you guys all know how to reach us if you want to reach us. In addition, though, tell your friends, review us on podcast review sites, and share us on social media. Okay? Everybody got that? Okay, good. So that's it for this week. Enjoy your week, everybody, and we'll talk to you again next time. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.